The Diesel Podcast.
Developing innovation in English as a second or other language.
Episode 79, Names and Nicknames of English Language Learners.
Welcome to Diesel. This is episode 79. We are your hosts. Can you believe it?
We're 79. Getting old.
I'm Brent Warner. There's my voice.
And I'm Michelle Reyes.
Sorry. There's people driving, like driving their Brent's car off of the road right now. I apologize.
No, he's going through second puberty.
Yes. That's called.
Happens at 79.
Is that how old you think I am? Welcome to February.
It is February.
Yeah. Are you, is life going good for you?
By the time this episode airs, life will be going amazingly for me.
Good. Well, that's future predictions. We do these shows with slightly ahead of recording times, and we'll make the assumption that that's all correct. All right. Michelle, you brought up a topic today that you want to talk about, and I think it's good. It's useful to really, because these conversations get so tricky, right?
This topic is dear to me because I just have never quite found, there's no black and white answer for it, but it deals with names and nicknames of English language learners, and of course, as dealing with international populations, the first day of class, you're always struggling to pronounce students' names correctly. And students from certain parts of the world may choose nicknames that maybe are not conventional here or practical. But then, of course, teachers wanting to not mispronounce will call a student by their nickname, or maybe if the nickname isn't, I don't know, if the teacher doesn't deem it appropriate or they're not comfortable saying it, they'll want to change it to something. And so it always brought me back to the conversation about my actual legal name, my real name, Michelle, for a long time. And still, actually, it's a Mayan name. It's got traditional indigenous spelling. And it's hard for Americans, or I would say, yeah, Americans or English speaking people to pronounce it. And for a long time, I just went by, okay, they call me Michelle, let them call me Michelle. Or then I went for, okay, that's too hard for you. I hate being called Michelle. Can you just call me by my middle name? And I went by my middle name for about 3 years. And it wasn't until, and of course, it was me being very shy and also not wanting to draw attention to myself that I allowed it. I just let that happen. And then, of course, as I got older, as I got wiser, as my eyes began to see things differently, I realized how important it is for us to pronounce, to at least try to pronounce a student's name, and then understand that when they choose a nickname, it's really their choice. Okay, well, that's where I want to start.
Yeah,
we can move the conversation, but that's where I want to start, because your name is Brent, easy to pronounce.
Well, for native English speakers,
Bren.
Yes.
Bren. They call you Bren with no T at the end.
Well, it is hard for a lot of Japanese? My students.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And actually, this is kind of an interesting point, too. And I have different kind of feeling, you know, like, of course, living in Japan for all these years, and in Japanese, my name is Burento, right?
Burento.
and, you know, which is fine. I'm quite used to it. This is kind of like my white guy in the dominant culture kind of approach to that, which is that, like, I didn't care at all about having my name changed or you know, Japanese-ified to become Burento, even though my, you know, the proper pronunciation would be Brent. Most Japanese people would really struggle to pronounce my name properly. But to me, that was never, ever an issue. But I also know that I'm kind of able to say that as, you know, white guy with a lot of privilege in other ways. And my own priorities are are slightly different because of that, I guess, right? And so so to me, that it took me a long time to step into this conversation because I never felt like it affected me, or I was like, well, whatever, mm-hmm. like, who cares if people have a different pronunciation? And when I was in Spanish classes as a kid or whatever, like, you know, we took on different nicknames, and that was part of the process of, like, the junior high and high school Spanish classes at least in California. So, so yes, of course, you know, for native English speakers, my name is fairly easy, although, you know, Brent is not the most common name.
Right.
But yeah, it's, I always kind of held back a lot from this conversation because I didn't really feel, until recent years when I started, mm-hmm. I too started looking at it and trying to understand what students are going through. I never thought too much about it. So I think it is interesting and it's worth bringing up.
And I think about it all the time because, yes, my experience, my own experience, but it was mostly because, 10 years ago, almost 8 years ago, I had a student who wanted, a female student who wanted to be called by a male name. Mm. And the student dressed with what we would classify as male gendered clothing, and had a short hairstyle, so could maybe be male or female at first glance. And so I made sure that the student understood, okay, is this the nickname you want to be called? I will learn your actual legal name, because that's how your paperwork is going to be filled out. But of course, if you want to be called that nickname, we'll call you that. The student reassured me, yes, that's the name. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, a colleague of mine in a lounge conversation refused to call her by that nickname. And I don't think it was ill-intended. I think my colleague wanted to make sure that the student, once leaving our you know, the comfort of the English language courses and going into a class where maybe the population would not be used to international populations, they may give the student a hard time. But I just thought at that time, I remember arguing back and saying, no, I'm going to call the student what the student wants me to call, as long as they're comfortable with it. And if that's a nickname that I find unconventional, as long as it's not a curse word,
right,
then that's a different conversation. And so again, with Chinese populations or, you know, other Thai populations, you might get nicknames like Diamond or Ice. I had a student named Ice. I had a Merlin. Mm-hmm. I had a Heisenberg. I had an Audi. I had a Lexus. And yeah, I said, you want to be called Lexus, I will call you Lexus.
Right.
But I'm going to learn your real name. Your legal name. And I want to try. I want to be better at pronouncing it, because I know what it's like to have a teacher say, oh my gosh, how do you pronounce that name? And then revert to my last name, or say, Michelle. No, it's not Michelle. And then thinking that I'm playing a joke on them. Someone thought my name was spelled wrong. And then they said, oh, your name is Xochitl. No. Just because it has an X in it, does it mean it's Xochitl? And that was like the only exposure they had to Mayan names, Mayan and Aztec names. And of course, it puts the burden on the person who owns the name to explain it. But I now have shifted to, well, if they're giving it a try, even it's just, that's good enough for me. And so again, then I think of our students. We should, as teachers, we should be trying our best to show them that we're also not perfect at other languages. And just like we ask them to pronounce things over and over again, we should also make an effort. And of course, there's a whole conversation of names and the culture that they're in and the dominant population. And
So I think that this is interesting, and it's very tricky, right? Because you get, let's take your student, and just to protect the innocent in this conversation,
yeah,
we'll say that I don't know what the if she identified as still as a female, but let's just say her name was Richard, right? Or she had chosen her name, let's just say Richard, which is, you know, man's name, of course, right?
I mean, and this is, again, like, see how difficult it is for us to approach it, but right. how...
Even trying to describe it, right? Like to make sure, like, oh, am I getting your gender right? Am I getting all these other things right? But yes, so let's say her name's Richard, right? And she's chosen this name. That's really part of where the question comes in at, right? Because we're going to say, well, do you want to use an English or an American, whatever nickname, right? Or would it be better for you if people went back and spent the time and the effort to try to figure out how to pronounce your real name properly, right? The first thing that comes to mind, as you mentioned, was Chinese students, because it's hard a lot of times for people who haven't studied Chinese, and even for me, I have studied Chinese, it's still hard because of the intonation, right? So like in Chinese, names have different intonations, words have different intonations. And so we've talked about this a little bit before, but like the ma thing, you know, and it's like, well, those are all ma to me, right? But to that person, if I say the wrong intonation when I'm saying their name, then it could potentially be a offensive name, or it could potentially be, you know, like just because of the fine ways that Chinese people can hear the tone of their language and understand it, right? To them, they would never make the mistake. But to me, who doesn't hear any sound separately between those two, I might really struggle with it, right?
Right.
And so, they might choose to have an English nickname for that reason, right? Because they're like, well, I don't want you to say something that would mean, like, you know, I don't know, my name means, you know, dog.
Whatever it is, yeah. Right? Well, so of course, you know, on the first day of class, I ask my students to tell me the correct pronunciation so that I am able to recognize it. And then also their nickname so that I learn the whole thing, or at least become familiar with it. Just because you're going, all of the paperwork you're going to be filling out for that student needs to match, right? You don't want to make a mistake. But oftentimes I would say, hey, but I know I studied Mandarin and I can pronounce your name. That one's fairly easy for me to pronounce. And they'd say, oh, but I had this nickname from the time I was little in China or Taiwan, because they had been studying English for so long. And that was the nickname. So that had become part of their identity. Mm-hmm. So who am I to now say no, but because I can pronounce it now, I want to use this name. And again, they're, you know, going out.
You're coming
of their
in
way.
As the colonizer, telling them they can't use their new name that they have already identified. It's like, it's so messy.
Again, like, this is so, it's such a complex issue, but we deal with this every time we have a brand new class and of mixed students. I often had students from Arab backgrounds or Arab speaking nations that their name is Majid, but it's hard to hear that D sound at the end, Majid. Mm-hmm. So people say Magic, and eventually they changed their name to Magic. Call me Magic. And they were totally okay with it. But again, I don't know. I feel like sometimes there may be with exceptions, people who get lazy and just decide, no, I'm just going to call you Magic. It's just easier for me. Mm. And yeah, I think there's, I don't know. There's just so many ways this could go. What about, for example, I know I've mentioned in other episodes, I worked at a reservation where the students' names were their given names, like Little Feather or Butterfly or Hawk or I think there was a Little Thunder, Deer Hoof, and not necessarily where I work, but those are the native names. Mm-hmm. And students would get bullied or made fun of because of those names, not understanding that these are of indigenous background. And so again, what do you do? What's an important, you're not going to now change the name or give him a different name, because that's what happened. We're repeating history all over again. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's kind of it's a bit of a vicious cycle here, because it's like, you can't win one way, you can't win the other. So, I mean,
how do we approach it?
Yeah. So how, and that's my question for you is like, what do you say to your students when you're coming in so that they feel like like they have, you know, like you want to, I don't know, for me, I feel like I want to present to them like, hey, I think your name is important, right? And mm-hmm. and I think your real name, not your nickname, your given name is important too. That being said, many people reject their given name for all sorts of other reasons, mm-hmm. right? And so it's kind of like you bring up this conversation, this overall conversation, to tell people the value of their names, and then you clarify that before you really even get them to tell you what their name is. Is that your approach to it?
Well, the way that I approach it is, luckily or unluckily, or maybe previously unluckily for me, my name is difficult. In fact, they cannot pronounce it when they see it on the board. So I say, look at my name. Where do you think it's from? Mm-hmm. And so I start that way. Of course, that because oftentimes they are familiar with American names or American spellings with the most common names, but they'll know right away. They'll start guessing. I'll get random countries that they tell me or random languages. And then I say, well, my name is from this place. And this was my experience growing up in America. And I do tell them, my experience. And I think that's something that just that now I can use as a tool. But then I have them listen to different perspectives on names. And also being that America is very an individualistic, I guess our values are very individualistic. Mm-hmm. Your name, like when we look at plagiarism, when we look at giving credit for things, a name is something that belongs to you, right? And it represents you, what you have. And so that it becomes kind of a bigger conversation of, this is why teachers tell you, why do you call me teacher? I'm going to call you student. And so I talk about them about that, why teachers don't want to be called teacher here, where in their country to call a teacher by their name is offensive, mm-hmm. right? Is mm-hmm. And so I open up the conversation with that perspective. And then I usually, and I shared this with you, Brent, there's a, depending on the population of my students, the background of my students, ethnic background of my students, I might, for example, with our Chinese students, because they faced a lot of the people that have to read their names or say their names face difficulty with them. I shared this podcast episode from NPR. I think it's called So Long, Cinderella. Mm. And it's an interesting piece on students in China who chose unconventional nicknames that could then present, give them problems when actually being in the workplace. So, for example, a student had chosen the name Seven, but then in the podcast, they talked about making an appointment to meet with Seven at 11. Would be problematic, right?
Right. It gets super confusing, right? And by the way, that example's not much better now because of Stranger Things, right? Where the girls
can, yes, the girls, where the girls actually
name, like, yeah, yes, that's totally a fine name. You're like, it's still kind of.
Well, true. I'm now curious if there was a rise in the popularity of choosing 11 as a name for our Chinese students. I haven't had Chinese students in a while, mm-hmm. so I'm thinking if they were fans of the show, which oftentimes they choose celebrities or items or sounds that they favor, that would become problematic. And so you've got to, I think, be sensitive about it. Be what's the word? Yeah. Be careful about how you're bringing it up.
Well, and that's the trick too, right? Is like, mm-hmm. if students are choosing these English nicknames for themselves, right? They might not be fully aware of the... And again, I know we've got people listening from all over, but like the cultural mm-hmm. implications of their chosen English name, right? So,
right.
You know, if they chose, I mean, this is I don't think I've ever seen this before, but just going to go with the most extreme example, right? But like, let's say someone chose the name Hitler, right? And they're like, well, yeah. Okay, mm-hmm. you might understand that and you're going to be potentially provocative, but you might not really know what all the history behind that name. I mean, mm-hmm. That's too terrible of an example, but like, you know, like they might choose some name that's like,
well, I had a Bling Bling Diamond.
Yeah. Okay. There we go.
And she wanted Bling Bling Diamond. Mm-hmm. And I told her, do you know what Bling Bling means or where it comes from? And so we had a conversation, and I said, okay, I'll call you Bling Bling Diamond. but about a week later of being on campus and being around students, and she dropped the bling bling. Mm. and she just became Diamond.
Right.
And that's, and again, I guess in that case, and she asked me not to call her Bling Bling Diamond. She wanted me to call her Diamond. Mm. And I didn't want to ask, like, why did you change? I just kind of assumed that that's what happened, that she probably met someone who was surprised and, you know, talked to her about it, or maybe hopefully not laughed, but I can just imagine how those conversations may have gone. But if the student made the choice and that decision and understands how it can negatively or positively impact them, then I think that that's a fair, you've explored enough.
Yeah.
I think and if we go back to the student who had chosen a male name, I think what I remember thinking, my colleague said, well, I don't want other people to make fun of her. And I just thought, but wait a minute, what if this is the only chance where this individual can express their gender and has been able to actually fully integrate into that, what character? I don't know what to call it, even a role, mm-hmm. or gender role. And I don't want to take away that freedom that they can express here. Less likely to be persecuted, I imagine, and maybe where they were from. I don't want to be that one who does it.
Right.
If that's what they're expressing. And it could be, again, this conversation is just important to have and important to just think about. I don't think that I'm always going to be wondering what should have been the right approach. What could I have done? What will I do in the future?
Oh, for sure. Well, so this makes me think of one of the areas that I kind of would struggle with this a little bit. and I am not the appropriate person to bring this up again, but it's like, sometimes students will choose names that might be, so like, let's just say, you know, a student from Asia somewhere, right? And they're into hip hop culture, and maybe they mm-hmm. choose a name that kind of comes out of, you know, Black cultural identities, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have any association with that for themselves. It's really hard, even saying they're a beginning level language learner, right? Well, I can't really talk to them about what cultural appropriation means, and
right.
like, they're not really going to understand all these things. And in their culture, it's like, you know, maybe none of those things are issues, but in America, mm-hmm. that's a big time conversation, mm-hmm. right? And so that gets real tricky. And then for me, like, okay, I'm going to be, again, white guy teacher coming in telling an Asian person that they can't choose this name because it's for Black people. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, like I get stuck in those situations, right? Where it's like, well, mm-hmm. what is my role in all of this, and how do I appropriately guide someone through it? And can I even appropriately guide them through it? Like this starts to get really complicated, which is, you know, they're good for conversations, but like I was saying, many of our students are not linguistically equipped to even understand the depth of the conversation.
Right. And we're talking about nicknames, but what about legal names? Mm-hmm. I had a student from, I want to say Thailand or Vietnam, and I'm going to be wrong. I don't remember exactly, but his name was Por, P-O-O-P-O-R, mm-hmm. pronounced Por.
Mm-hmm.
So who were we to change it because he would say, I'm poor? Right. And I remember these conversations, and he knew the meaning of the word. He didn't want a nickname. Oh, he didn't use a nickname. I'm going to assume that he didn't want one. And I would just call them that's a poor. And that then once we had the conversation, we just continued as normal. And then we just got used to that's his name. And then our frame of mind changed because now we knew we were referring to a name in another language. So also along the same lines, I had a student named Pear and her twin sister, Apple. From Thailand, legal names, Apple and Pear. And then, of course, I read about the background of why in other cultures they tend to go with English words as the legal names. And again, I may think it's weird, because, but that's who am I to tell them to change it? or to try not to say it. Like, see how difficult it is even for me to talk about it? And then I know we mentioned before, but then you have celebrities who name their kids North mm-hmm. or Blue Ivy or Saint, right? So yeah. I guess it shows you the power that some people have over choosing a quote unquote unconventional name.
Well, and that's its own whole separate conversation yep. is like, if you're an incredibly powerful celebrity and you choose this kind of unusual name for your child, I don't remember, Elon Musk's kid has that.
Oh, like, goodness.
I don't
know. The kid
even
with
know.
The password name.
Yeah. So like if you're in a position where you can name your child with those names, right? Like,
it shows power.
It's total power, but like, mm-hmm. and then it's like, well, I also don't want to tell students coming in, like, you don't have that power, right? Like you don't have the power to choose something for yourself.
Right, because then you're taking away that power that they do have.
Right. So there's like, it gets like, I think from what you're saying and from what I've gleaned out of my own experience trying to talk with students about these things is like, to me, I think the best thing is to try to briefly but clearly make sure they understand the implications of their names and then tell them that they do have the freedom of choice. And most importantly, I want the students to understand that I will respect their given name, right? Because I think a mm-hmm. lot of students probably are still choosing just because they feel like they're trying to make it easier on an American mm-hmm. or whatever it is, right? And say like, oh, it's just too hard for you, so you can't do it. And it's like, well, like you mentioned before, I'm trying to do these things, right? Like I mm-hmm. want to be able to do these things, and me getting your name right helps me too to open my worldview and to be a little bit more whatever, right? And so instead of putting the impetus of the hardness of it on the student, you can say, well, hey, I can take some of that burden a little bit and try to work through it. I might not get the tone perfectly of your name. Are you okay with that? Are you not okay? Right. Like, and then that can still, at the end of the day, could still be their choice. Right.
Right. Oh, it hurts. It hurts my brain to talk about these things. But again, I think I've brought this up so many times before. Part of it, I also tell students when they come, when we have this conversation about names, when we open up the conversation, is your name is part of your identity. Let's talk about who gave you that name. How did it come about? Because some students are going to talk about how it's a family name, right? It's a tribe from generations back that they can trace all the way up to, you know, different generations. Some will say, oh, it's because my parents own this and they've done this all their life there. And so they gave me the name Fish. And that's, you know, the character is what it symbolizes. And then there might be some like, my parents just chose it because they liked the sound. Mm-hmm. And that's just as valid, right? And some students will tell you, well, I don't like my name, or I don't like the spelling, or I want to change it. And that's just, again, that conversation, just having that conversation gives so much power to them. To number one, do you feel like you represent your name? Some do, some don't. Some say, I want to change my name. Some say, I'm very proud of my name. And then you get all of these students from different cultures sharing that, and then understanding that in America, or I keep saying America, in the United States, first names are important. Okay, why? Last names are important. Okay, why? And then we start talking about what that means. When you see your name, what do you think about? And so on. So I think at the end of the discussion, whether students go with the nickname that they chose, or they go with no nickname, or they prefer that you pronounce, that you Americanize the pronunciation, that was their choice, mm-hmm. right? That was their choice.
So I like this a lot. This gives some interesting different potentials. I want to throw in one other part, because you and I, mm-hmm. for the most part, when we have our students come in, usually they've already kind of chosen something, or mm-hmm. or at least they they might want to change it or whatever else it is, but most of the time, because they're adults, they've kind of already made that choice, right? But mm-hmm. I know a lot of people listening might be like junior high school teachers or you know, like elementary teachers, and kind of this is one of the things that happens, especially if you're maybe an EFL teacher, right? And you're like, okay, mm-hmm. let's come into the class and now we're going to be learning English and now we're going to choose our English names, right? Like that might be part of that conversation. And so I want to talk just briefly about this concept, and it for me, this came out of this article that you had shared also, was should teachers assign target language names? And that's in Education World. We'll put the link up. It's like 10 years old, but it's super relevant still, which I thought was
names
really,
are names.
Yeah. And they get into like the pros and cons of like, you know, should we be giving students these names or should we not? And so I guess I kind of want to get your thoughts on like, if a student comes in and hasn't ever considered it, but maybe they know, hey, like I'm going to get an English name, right? Like, because for children, that can be role playing and that can be fun too, right? Mm-hmm. Like to go, oh, okay, this is going to be, and even, you know, psychologically, like that's going to get them into their headspace of being like, oh, you know, now it's English time because I'm using my name, you know, Michael instead of, you know, my real name or whatever else it is, right? And so there could be a psychological aspect to switching your name as well, right? So and again, you know, just more just throwing more fuel on the fire of like all the ways that they're, this is like good and bad and problematic and supportive all at the same time, right? So what would you suggest, or what are your thoughts on like new students coming in that maybe have never really thought about an English name?
So you mean when you're teaching EFL, like if you were an EFL teacher?
Yeah. So like if you're overseas. So
Where the conversation ultimately takes me is I don't feel comfortable with student. Again, this is where if I were the teacher, I wouldn't feel comfortable because it leads me to, okay, but if a target language is Spanish and you provide a range of different Spanish names, it's also going to highlight different generations of name usage. So for example, I in English, we have the name Karen, right? Mm-hmm. Karen now means the, when I say Karen, oh, she's a Karen. What does that mean, Brent, in today's society?
Can I speak to your manager?
Yes.
Or not Karen, sorry. I want to talk
entitled, yes. So my sister has a Karen. Her Karen comes out in Spanish. Her Karen is Conchita. And Conchita is an I would say regional, and it's sort of like I would qualify it as an old fashioned name. But mm-hmm. that also shows now my bias, because I'm used to like, oh, that's like an old lady name. Mm-hmm. An old like annoying lady name. And so it depend, you would have to be really careful to choose names. I don't know. I just, again, it would be from the region or what generation. And it's like a student choosing Florence.
Yeah. Yeah. So like
old and Florence could names. Be now cool or old.
Yeah. Right. So,
and versus Flo, right? FLO for Florence. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, but then what if we switch now, say, for Japanese? I was studying Japanese, and I would have thought it was so cool to have a name in Japanese characters. Mm-hmm. Because it shows you that languages have ascribed perceived value, sort of. I don't know if I'm expressing that correctly. Or, and I've asked my students, if I had an Arabic name, what Arabic name would you give me? And they've never given me a name. They'll always say, no, Ishel. It's easy to pronounce. Ishel, Ishel. They'll say Ishel, Ishel. And I've said, but I really want to be called Maha. No, you don't look like a Maha. It's like, well, what does a Maha look like? And so again, it takes me back to that. So for me personally, I would simply say, go with your name. You know what? If your name is difficult to pronounce for Spanish speakers, it's fine. Mm-hmm. Get a shortened version of it, but you make that choice. Right. You make that choice. Again, we're in an English speaking country. So it's so hard for me to talk about this, because there's a fine line between, or the fine line of crossing over into taking away the power from somebody is just, it's just so fine. Mm-hmm. but then we switch to another language, like French, for example.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I personally was never given a Japanese name or asked to. They just simply called me by my last name and my first name. So I was Reye-san or Isheru-san. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, my name's not going to be pronounced wrong anyway, because it's pronounced, transliterated. So,
right.
Okay, I can live with that. That's easier for them. The Japanese have no problem with my name.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, again, from this article, the person who wrote this, who I think her name was Rebecca Stathakis, at the end, she kind of said, hey, you know, the way that she finally made a solution for her Spanish mm-hmm. class was she created a list of names, mm-hmm. like a long list of names, and like she didn't want the students choosing, I think according to the article, she didn't want them choosing names like Ola or, you know, like something that has like a weirder kind of name. So she said, hey, it does have to be a real name, but the students mm-hmm. could kind of choose from the list. I think if I were going to step into a class like that and mm-hmm. students really wanted to, first I would encourage them, hey, it's okay, use your real name. Like, I think that conversation would probably come first. But then if they still wanted to have an English name, I think what I would do is maybe something similar, which is, hey, here is a list of, you know, 100 popular common names these days, right?
For that, yeah, because they could be looking up a list of 100 popular names in the 80s.
Correct. Yeah, so the timing matters, right? So and then I would say, like, what, by the way, like, my suggestion would be then that you would choose maybe 3 of these names that might be potential, and then come talk to me and I will tell you any implications that I kind of feel are hidden behind this name, right? And so if it's like, you know, Benedict, for example, they, mm-hmm. they end up saying, well, it's Benedict. And it's like, well, yeah, so there's Benedict Cumberbatch, which is, you know, like kind of cool, but there's also Benedict Arnold, right? Which is like traitor, right? So do you understand that, you know, like maybe only history buffs or older generations, you know, like I don't know that younger people know Benedict Arnold as much, right? And again, sorry, younger generations, I might be making a false assumption here, but all I'm saying is that then they could get a couple of implications of the meaning from a teacher who understands more of the culture of that, right? And then finally they could make their choice, right? Does that seem like a fair approach to it, maybe?
Yeah, and I think I would even, I think, again, leaving the power to the students, I think one way that you can have that, you know, this talking about names would come obviously at the beginning of a brand new class, mm-hmm. and you could use that to have the students give a, you know, when you're doing your diagnostic speaking sample, have them talk about names, or it could be in a very, you know, you could be walking around listening to them talk about it in their groups. You could have them then write about it. And you could have questions that you're asking. I always say, okay, you know, how do you write or spell the name in your country? Is it the same as what they've given you here? Because oftentimes Arabic names are, the name might be the same in Arabic, but then when they transcribe it to English, the spelling is different. Mm-hmm. So I've seen multiple spellings of a particular last name. And then, of course, what do you do when you have a class of all Arabic speakers? Their first name is Ahad. This is not a fake story. This is true. I had 6 Mohammeds in one mm-hmm. class. I can't call a Mohammed 1, Mohammed 2, and then they all wanted to be called Mo. Uh-huh. So, yeah, I had to learn their last names. So of course, I'm going to learn their last names. And so I had to make myself flashcards and I had to color code them so that I would remember. Mm-hmm. But that showed them that I did care.
Yeah.
And again, I think in some of the articles that we researched or that we read before, one of them from NEA, The Lasting Impact of Mispronouncing Students' Names. In the article, they talk about how, you know, working with students from international populations to fully accept and respect the student, and this is a quote, you must at a minimum know how to pronounce their name. And another thing they talk about is about learning from the mistake of either mispronouncing it or just trying again. It's okay to make an error, but it's not okay to ignore it and continue making that mistake. And I think that's where I think it hits home for me. That's where it's like, at least try.
So Before we wrap up, maybe we could throw out a couple of possibilities on ways for teachers to kind of have some, skin in the game here and make sure that you're kind of giving the students those opportunities. So, Michelle, I'm not sure if you have a couple of ideas. One mm-hmm. resource at least that I can share is Name Coach, right? Name-coach.com. Have you been on that site? I think we looked at it before.
I've looked at it, but I've never used it.
So
yesterday I was trying to figure it out.
Yeah, our school what is it looking was. At installing it on system wide, and then it can kind of integrate into Canvas and different things. But basically, Name Coach lets people, and there's the simple little free thing lets you just make a quick recording of your own name, and then you get a page with that, and you can share that out as links. So we actually, it's pretty cool. The reason this comes up to me is one of our teachers has it in her signature. And it right in mm-hmm. your signature, it says, click here to hear how to pronounce my name, right? And so I like that. It's like, oh, okay, cool, right? So you can click on it. You can hear her pronouncing her own name, right? So for example, a lot of people have names that could be pronounced in different ways. So you can get the right pronunciation of their name or the way that they prefer to have their name pronounced. And you could actually have all of your students do this too, and they could just send you a link to it, and you can keep a little file with the links of all the students' names as well. So name-coach is a pretty good option there. And then it does all these other cool things, like you can actually just type in people's names and you can hear, if people are already in the system that have that name, then you can hear how they pronounce it, even if your student hasn't necessarily recorded it. So that could be one way for students to make a quick reference and make it easy for you to go back instead of saying, well, I wrote it down, but I don't really know what I wrote down. So,
that's really cool because one of the things in the latter few years, what I've resorted to is in my email signature. I didn't know how to make it known. Now, of course, I put my gender, or my pronouns. Mm-hmm. My gender pronouns, but in the past I was often called sir or mister. And it just bothered me so much. It's like, how can you assume? of course now I have the option of putting the gender pronouns, but I used to put in parentheses e-shell. And in some cases I'll put the phonetic pronunciation, the phonetic spelling, but not everybody's gonna know the phonetic alphabet. But yeah. I have had people in the past now tell me, oh, I'm so glad you put that in there because I knew how to pronounce your name from that. And I just thought, oh, someone's actually paying attention and wondering how to pronounce my name. Mm-hmm. And of course, that also avoids the inevitable comment, oh, I don't want to butcher your name, mm-hmm. which actually bothers me a lot. It's like, how about you say, can you teach me how to pronounce your name? Can you correct me when I say it wrong? That's how about that one instead of, I don't want to butcher your name, or I butchered your name, or I'm going to butcher your name. Or forgive me if I'm butchering your name. I don't know why, but you're basically saying I'm destroying your name. And I take that. It actually hurts me.
Uh-huh. So that's kind of like, yeah. So we had, there's a lot of that conversation. Maybe this is a parallel reasoning with the, I have broken English, right? When students say that, yes. Right?
My English. And I used to use that all the time. No, yeah. You have learner's English. My students will apologize all the time. Excuse me for my poor English. Excuse mm-hmm. me for my broken English. Like, first of all, who told you that? You are using emerging English. It's beautiful. It's perfect the way it is at this stage. It's going to get better. You have learner's English. You are learning. Mm-hmm.
Developing hmm? English, right? Yeah.
So sorry?
I'm just saying, like, I have forming English, or I have developing English. Or,
yeah, absolutely. Right?
So you can kind of change that. Yeah, I was.
You and I have proficient English, perfect English.
Heck yeah.
Y'all wrong.
Well, there was a politician out here. She's Korean descent, Michelle Steele. And she straight up in her commercial says, I may have a broken English, but I have this and this. And I'm like,
my heart.
Like,
my heart.
Yeah. It's like deep, it's reinforcing that as a way to approach it. Right. Yeah. And I was like, mm-hmm. I mean, politically, I've got other issues with her, but I felt bad like seeing that on the commercial. I'm like, that's not really the best way to present, you know, and again, that's me telling them how they need to present, I guess, but like,
right.
But it is interesting, right? It's tricky to get this all right. So, okay. So a couple of ways, you can put in the IPA, or you could put in just, you know, like your dashes with the letter spelling in the right ways. You could use Namecoach. You could use Flipgrid.
I used to flip. We don't have Flipgrid.
Flipgrid's such a better name. Come on, you guys.
I know, it was catchy. Oh, two syllables.
Flip. What a bummer. Sorry.
Flip sounds like I'm flipping you off.
I know. Ann Cosmo's out there listening, and she's like, "Sorry, Ann. We love you. Just if Flip is not as good a name as Flipgrid was. So, but you could do Flip." You could do Flip, and then you could have students talk through, right? So you could actually set up the assignment and have them really talk through the explanation of their name, what it means, what the history is, right? So that's a quick and easy way. Plus, you get to hear it repeated over and over again through that. So I think that, like, some of these, video recording and voice recording options really change things in a way that mm-hmm. we didn't used to be able to do, when it was just like, hey, tell me one time in class and write it down on a piece of paper, and then, you know, when I review it at the end of the week, will I remember, will I not, right? And so I think that using some of this technology can be can help alleviate this as a problem.
I wanted to throw in another resource for those teachers who may not know where to start with and they want to have this conversation. The website mynamemyidentity.org has a lesson plan that you can start. It doesn't have to be high tech. They have other ways that you can start this conversation. And it just, you know, it makes it for a more welcoming environment, a more open to diversity environment. And it's all of this is just crucial to building positive relations in the classroom and having healthy social, psychological, and educational outcomes, especially in our diverse United States.
Yeah, for sure. So there's a lot to think. I mean, today's conversation is mostly just kind of,
it's just the biggest surface. I think I could talk about this in just several segments.
Well,
I would like to take all sorts of perspectives on this.
Yeah. And I mean, there's so many places where we can go wrong, and all mm-hmm. with good intention. Right. And so this is where it really does get tricky, because your colleague who refused to use the student's, you know, male identifying name or whatever, mm-hmm. right? Like, that person wasn't coming out of a place of hatred, or, you know, like
they were trying to protect. Mm-hmm. They were coming out of, they wanted to protect. They wanted to make sure that the student wouldn't be humiliated or shamed in public, or they wanted to try to, but again, it also shows a generational gap. My colleague was from an older generation, where I feel like, no, more power to you. You know, that's your name. You decide. You force that person to use it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'd be interested to hear from anyone listening
or how you approach a situation. I'm sure that people overseas, if you're listening overseas and you've seen a phenomenon like this with names particular to a region and nicknames or potential issues, it would be great to have that conversation continue, and so that we can all learn.
Yeah. So, of course, you can leave a note in the show notes. So diesel.org/79. We would love to hear different approaches, ways that we're wrong on this. I think there's lots of ways that we might be mm-hmm. wrong. In our attempt to share the conversation, there are definitely ways where it's like, you probably shouldn't do that, or maybe this is a better approach to it, right? So if you have any thoughts or want to share, please, please, please feel free. And of course, out there on the social medias, we'll share those at the end of the episode. But there's just a lot to think about here. And so,
hey, Brent, I have a question for you.
Yes.
How do you correctly pronounce my name?
Ishel.
Wrong.
Ishel? You said Ishel.
Ixchel.
Oh.
So pronounce that.
Is that really the right one?
Yeah.
Ixchel?
I love you for trying.
One more time?
Ixchel.
Ixchel?
It's not quite an XC. It's almost like an XTZ.
Ixchel.
Ixchel. Yeah. Look at you go.
We all got to try, right?
I love it.
Wait a second,
but
though,
of course, like, I've gone by Ixchel for so long.
Pronunciation, right?
No, because when I hear Ixchel, it's like, "Mom, why are you getting mad at me?" Oh, you're not my mom. Only colleagues who are from that area can say it, and it's just like it's jarring now because it's like, no, I'm just so my personality is Ixchel. Uh-huh. So
okay, so when people who do know pronounce it correctly, then there's still another hidden layer behind all of that too that we have to deal. Oh my gosh. Woo! All right.
All right, it is time for our fun finds. And this time I have Quest protein chips in chili limon or chili lemon or lemon chili.
Which pronunciation is the right way? So, chili limon?
Chili limon. I don't know. I wrote it wrong.
Lemon.
Chili limon. Chili limon. I don't know. I'm saying it in Spanish. My brain just switched to Spanish. But there are Quest protein chips. As you know, I run a lot. Mm-hmm. And recently I've been doing a lot of kickboxing. But you do, as you get older, you do have to be more careful about what you're putting in your body. And I am just a sucker for crispy things, cookies, sweets, and obviously potato chips. And a way to get to not have all that sodium and all of those calories is to eat Quest chips. And they have them in many flavors. They're a little pricey, but they're really worth it because, again, as you get older, you just have to make sure you're staying healthy. So you can find them at Target.
So we're supposed to be staying healthy as we get older because I'm not.
Brent, more protein. Make sure you're getting your protein.
Okay, more protein. All right.
What do you have?
So mine is the new TV show on HBO called The Last of Us.
Is that based on a video game?
Yeah. So I played that video game. I played both of the video games, part one and two.
Cool.
And this is like, people are going kind of crazy for it because it's the first video game. Like, it's the first one where people are like, actually, this is a pretty rad show.
Yeah, because usually the shows are crap.
Yeah, usually shows and movies based on video games are pretty bad. Every once in a while something okay will come out, but this one people are going like, oh, this is actually all solid. I've only seen the first episode so far, but it was legit
and good enough,
yeah. They did good character building. They some really fascinating scenes. There's a lot, you know, it's like kind of zombie apocalypse type story, a little bit variation on that. So, you know, don't chase me down for, they're not zombies, I know, but like, but anyways, it is really interesting. And I only have a temporary HBO Max subscription. I got like a Black Friday deal on it for 3 months. And so I'm like, I think this is going to run out before the show is over. So I might have to extend one more month to watch the whole thing. But anyways, if you're interested, if you like the zombie shows and these kind of survival and post-apocalyptic stuff, The Last of Us might be an interesting choice for you.
All right. As always, we'd love to hear from you guys. If you're giving us a shout out or responding, be sure to tag us on social media. We are on all the platforms.
Yep. If you want to support the show, we got a couple of ways to do that on the website. We're not very good promoters of like finding out ways for people to support the show, but you know, if you want to, you can. If not, you know, our favorite way for you to support the show is just tell other people.
Share it. We're always happy to have new listeners and find out where they're from.
Yeah, for sure. So there are show notes for this episode at diesel.org/79. That's the number 79. And of course, you can listen to us at Voice Ed Canada. We are on Twitter at DieselPod, so DIESOLPOD, and I am at Brent G. Warner.
I'm IXY_Pixie, and that's IXY_PIXY.
In Armenian, and I apologize for this, but I'm going to do my best. Thank you is Shinorkak Kalyutun. So, Shinorkak Kalyutun for tuning in to the Diesel Podcast.
Thank you for trying. See you soon.